Welcome to the Glacier Review. What's new, Glacier View? Life in Arctown, events, interviews, and more. Whatever is new or news in Glacier View, plus a little bit more. Glacier View is located between mile 89 and 119 on the Glen Highway. The Glacier Review program is brought to you on KGVC, Big Glacier Radio, 91.5 on your FM dial. We are rebroadcast from KVRF, Radio Free Palmer, making radio cool again. My name is Joseph Davis. Today's star date is 60.10159. Again, today's star date, 60.10159. Next up is Glacier Notes. As you know, we're home to the Matanuska Glacier here in Glacier View, and it's the last greatest glacier you can drive to. So, Glacier Notes, I don't have any science or data for you today. Life is normal in Glacier View. The glacier's looking good. Visitors from across the state and around the world continue to visit and climb over the glacier. The river is roaring, so not much glacier news about the Matanuska Glacier today. And as I said, life is normal. And speaking of normal with the Glacier View Community Council notebook, we have no June council meeting this month, so there's no council notes. None are scheduled for the summer, though in case of need, we can always call a meeting. And by the bylaws, we need at least a 10-day warning, which is easy enough to do. In the meantime, work on the pavilion continues by Mike and his students at Job Corps in Palmer, as well as the gravel pad having been installed for the pavilion. So the gravel pad's in, and Job Corps over there is working on getting the wood ready and the roof and that. So there's steady progress on that project. The Welcome to Glacier View signs are built, painted, varnished. Oh man, are they looking good. They are great. They were built locally here and will be installed soon, somewhere around mile 111 and somewhere around mile 98. And they'll both say, Welcome to Glacier View. So they're really terrific looking. Our emergency volunteers. In Glacier View, we have 7 water tanks on wheels. They're for potential bushfires. They're all full of water now. But with all this rain, it is less likely. We haven't had any fires except for one we had about 6 weeks ago. A little burn pile got out of hand, but we got it sewed up. So we have our emergency water tanks full and waiting. Still, all caution should be taken in burn piles, etc. You know, it doesn't take very long from rain to potential fire hazard. Also, remember the first one to call is 911 and then refer to our local emergency list. And remember, 911 people, they call us too. For instance, if you dial 911 for a ambulance, they call the EMTs that live in Glacier View. So the quickest help is 911, but also refer to our phone list. Glacier View Community Council has an emergency list that Wendy Taylor puts together and keeps updated. Also, did you know that Glacier View Emergency Committee has 2 container vans with emergency supplies? We have a generator, lights, rappelling gear, and ropes. We have food enough to feed 30 people for 30 days if the road has some rock blockage or if the road disappears and falls away. We have food for 30 people for 30 days. Glacier View Emergency Committee is really spectacular. Other news, the 4th of July is coming up. We have a morning fun run, a 5K fun run for adults. And then we have a 1 mile run for kids, 1 or 2 miles. So that's coming on the morning of the 4th. I think it starts at 9:30, 9:45 the run, so come a little bit early. Same place, around mile 99 on the Glen. It'll be followed by the 4th of July events there at mile 99 at Arnie's. Also, we're going to have the 3rd annual roadside flea market on July 8th. So Saturday, July 8th. Now, we've had 2 flea markets already. This will be the 3rd flea market, the annual roadside flea market on the 8th. Same place, Mile 99, where a lot of things are happening this summer in Glacier View. Come check us out on the 8th. Find out your next treasure. Now that the rain has let up, we might even have some informal softball games, so keep tuned for some of those pop-up events. I'll send a note out by the email list. Glacier View Gardens will be having its regular garden tour later this summer when the gardens have got a bit of green on them. Speaking of green, I'm growing quinoa for the second summer in a row. My quinoa crop last year was about 4 feet high, and this year I have a much bigger crop. My crop from last year was not for eating, it was for growing more seed. So if you need some quinoa seed to plant your own starter crop, give me a shout. I have lots of seed from last year, and the seed is growing this year, spectacular growing. So it works. Quinoa was found in the modern age by NASA. They had it in Peru for centuries, and it is the highest protein food that they have found. They wanted a high protein food to take to the moon. So that's quinoa. You've seen it in salads recently, etc. You can grow it up here. What does it need? Acidic soil, windy, breezy, cloudy weather, higher elevations, acidic soil. This place was born for quinoa. So stay tuned for the quinoa report. Well, that's about it for the Glacier View Community Council. We don't have a lot of news, and that's okay. Anyway, stay tuned. We have more of our program from the Glacier Review. And remember, you can find us on Radio Free Palmer Facebook page and website, radiofreepalmer.org. Speaking of Radio Free Palmer, did you know that at 8:25 every morning, you can hear the weather report from Glacier View with Mark and myself and Mike? Mark and I live up here in Glacier View. We give the road conditions. We have the fireweed report, a new summer report for how the plants are doing, how the trails are. So stay tuned, 8:25 every morning. If you're driving trucks in the winter, maybe with Crowley or the Postman or FedEx or SBS, listen to the road report and the Glacier View weather at 8:25, Monday through Friday, here right live from Glacier View. We call it in by phone. It's live, and Mike is our host with Mark and myself. So that's the Glacier View weather every morning, 8:25. Next up is our guest, and I have a guest with me here today. So let's go get our guest.
How do we begin with all this?
How do we begin with all this is right? Well, we're recording. The good news is I can cut anything out.
I know it well.
And the bad news is that I rarely do. So there we go.
I'm going to watch your step.
Anyway, we're on Radio Free Palmer, which is in Palmer, Butte, Wasilla, Sutton, Chickaloon, Glacier View. It's quite a big area. Probably the size of Texas. Okay, I'm exaggerating there. It's not that big.
It's definitely bigger than England.
There you go. Yes. So my guest is an Englishman who now lives in Scotland, but only just. Where do you live in Scotland?
This is a small place called Coldstream. Renowned in the world because it was the home of the Coldstream Guards, a crack regiment of the British Isles.
So there were a lot of guards from there?
Oh, no, that was a specific platoon based there.
Ah, based there.
Grew up there. They're no longer there. It's literally where I live is, let me think, about a quarter of a mile from England.
Uh-huh. And you can see it from there?
Oh, yes.
Yes, you can look out your window and see England.
I can see England. It was where people, there was a war, the Battle of Flodden, people crossed there. Oh. And as the battle in which Scotland was very badly defeated, and was the turn of the war between the Scots and the English.
Oh. Is it a coastal village?
No, the coast is 40 miles away.
Okay. All right.
And it's a strange place there because there's Berwick upon Tweed, which is because Tweed is the barrier between, or say the barrier, I shouldn't say the boundary,
okay,
between Scotland and England, except it gets towards Berwick. And then Berwick, which is obviously on the port, as a port, the river widens and so on, becomes tidal. Is English. Oh. And it's been alternating English and Scots for hundreds and hundreds of years, has enormous battlements. And it had the kudos once, as my children told me from school, that it was officially still at war with Russia, because they hadn't signed a certain treaty some years ago, which is about one of those wacko things.
Right. Well, now you think you used the word boundary and barrier. I'd like to use the word frontier, because if you, the Alaska slogan is Alaska, the last frontier. And if you look up the word in the dictionary, because I did.
You would.
The word frontier means the ending point, the termination point, the boundary, the drawing line. Don't cross here. The frontier, you cross that and you're in somebody else's territory. So between Germany and Russia, or something between England and Scotland, that's the frontier, the borderline.
Endlessly.
But if you look at the second definition, it says an Americanism, it means unexplored territory. It means boundless potential. And so it's an Americanism. So Alaskans and Americans go, the last frontier, the last place of exploration. But if you know English very well, and you're an Englishman, so I would hope you do, frontier means the termination or the boundary or the border. Do you use it in that term in England?
We don't usually use the word frontier, because say it's more an American word, into a more boundary. But of course, I was brought up with Star Trek. So the final frontier.
There we go.
There you go.
That's it. It's Star. It all comes back to Star Trek. All right.
I want to say something about Scotland.
Please.
And I've verified a few times. It's very curious about the effect of ancient geology on the psyche of people and the history of people. It's such that Eastern Europe has always been a place of conflict, because it's a collision point between some plates, and it's called the Shadow Plane. So psychologically, politically, it's been the Shadow Plane. Now, I read some years ago that actually Scotland is actually North American.
Really?
It is a part which came from more than North America, drifted over, and joined on to the bit from Europe which became England. And I thought this was very weird, because...
So it is separate.
It is separate.
Really separate.
And the rocks are therefore different.
Sure.
But you see, where they joined is the region where I live, called the Borders.
I've heard of the Borders.
And the rivers from the two sides of Scotland and England, you know, came and deposited in the Borders and built up the land there. But you have that picture of the two places colliding. And why is it that there's still this echo?
Right.
Going psychologically, and in Eastern Europe.
Right.
And many places you look at the geology, you can see there are fault lines, there are differences of rocks.
Sure.
And the psyche changes.
Well, speaking of that, my wife went on a little bit of a geological tour with Corey Feige and a few others here in Glacierview. Corey is from Chicolin.
Mm-hmm.
Is a geologist and very knowledgeable. If you're driving from, say, Palmer towards, say, Sheep Mountain, when you go down Caribou Creek and you cross the creek and you start up again and you look to your left, to the north, there's a big rock there and you see sheep there. That is Hawaiian. That is the same kind of thing as Scotland. And that rock is a scrape off from when the rock that is now the Hawaiian Islands moved from. So we have a little bit of Hawaii in Glacierview, and doggone it, aren't we proud of it. Out the suntan lotion.
Yeah. A little bit of another world is almost as good as finding a bit of Mars. On a planet, which people do, of course.
Sure. They're called asteroids.
Exactly. They do come from Mars.
Yeah, that's true.
I love that idea that bits can be knocked off a distant planet and arrive here. Some other force bringing home a little souvenir, like rocks from the place you go, and you take up a little rock and bring it home with you.
So when the Earth was formed, do you think a bit of Earth might have broken off and be headed towards some distant star system by now? Be quite a ways by now. Or stuck in the Kuiper belt or something. Who knows?
But it's like things get around more than we expect them to get.
Yes, exactly.
Very fast.
Exactly. In fact, you got around. You came here to visit here at Glacier.
Excuse me. Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't introduced you. This is Tony Blake.
Anthony Blake.
Excuse me, Anthony Blake.
I want to be partial radio.
Exactly, Anthony Blake. Thank you. So I was going to ask how to introduce you, and we got to start. We got your name. So
that's not my full name.
What is your full name, sir?
Anthony George Edward Blake.
As in A-G-E Blake.
That's right. Age Blake, you see.
Age Blake. And I believe people can find books in the library by you.
They can indeed.
And what do you think these books are about?
Oh, these books of, it's like, I hope they're books about somebody representing the reader. That is to say, that you wake up or you come to be born and you see, I'm a human being, I'm in this place and I don't really know what's going on. And you go to school and you hear these people all seeming to know what's going on, but a bit later then you think, do they really know what's going on?
Right.
What the story is. They're just telling stories, and you see lots and lots. When you're a kid, of course, all the adults are telling stories.
Sure.
And patriotic stories, religious stories, all kinds of stories people are telling, and poor mm-hmm. kids soak it all up. Because that's one of the miracles of the human species, you see. Only thing you can be a poor little kid, and you can learn about the nature of the universe and history just by somebody talking to you, and it's a miracle, you see. And we're designed to absorb this very easily.
Right.
But then you begin to suspect and think, who does know? And you, as the, I think probably it's in some popular song somewhere, you go to your priest and go to your scientist and go to your teacher and go to your politician and ask them, and they're all full of answers, but you know they're all faking it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a lot of young people, I think, feel this, mm-hmm. but then they get over it because you've got to have a job and mm-hmm. get ahead, you know, and be successful and all mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I never quite got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep on questioning this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in my life, I've been a little bit fortunate in having some exposure to modern science, which I love very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as in a feeling for history and the arts and many things, I'm multivariate, so to speak. And this gives me a chance of saying, Where can we find the, who knows, who is the knower in this, what is it all about? And I find that it's largely still little bits and pieces. So my books, I'm expressing this.
Mm-hmm.
Say,
and you've met quite a few very interesting people in your life.
I've been lucky, yes.
Yes.
Just like you have too.
Yeah. Well, I met you. There we go.
I met you.
So you mentioned science for one thing, and you mentioned history for one. What's new in science that's really caught your attention?
Oh, that's so difficult because it's changing so much. It's the part which interests me the most because it's my subject of interest in a way. Well, first of all, to emphasize for people is, you know, scientists and the scientific world is representative of humanity.
Okay, right.
There are like all kind of different approaches,
sure.
different feelings and so on, but the one thing the scientific community has, which most communities don't have, is that they're able to some degree to talk to each other and refer to the same facts.
To share.
And to share.
To share.
And the more
collaborative. Is that a word? Collaborative?
They have to work, you know, because science is international. Absolutely intrinsically international. And mathematics even more so. There's no respect for country or power, authority or anything in it. That's why often science, like in the present American government, is rejected. Because it's independent,
you know, sure.
and global, embracing,
and not controllable.
And not controllable, in essence. And so, anyway. And that cooperation is, sense of cooperation has always attracted me. And I know scientists are fallible.
Sure.
And they're egoists. And they,
well, and you learn more and grow more.
Changing
and,
mind.
Yeah.
And often people say, these scientists, they can't make up their mind. They're changing their mind. I thought, great. That's a horrible thing in the world. You see these authorities being proud of the fact they never change their mind, which mm-hmm. means they're idiots.
Mm-hmm.
They never learn anything. Mm-hmm. Because if you're learning, you must change your mind
sure.
all the time.
Sure.
Anyway, and it, because I was very influenced by one of my tutors, a very famous name in physics in Bristol University. He was exiled from America because of McCarthyism.
Oh, a dark era in American history.
Indeed. As he was, you know, interested, of course, in all kinds of ideas in which the...
And he was a scientist.
Yes. Oh. He worked with Oppenheimer.
You know, Oppenheimer.
And Oppenheimer was getting persecuted by McCarthy and so on. And then David Bohm was, his physicist was there because he'd worked with Oppenheimer. So anyway, but David refused to collaborate with the committee at all, so he was exiled. And as that was God's fortune, or my fortune, sent to me by some higher power, that he came and was my tutor, and I could speak to him as a person, and because I was in awe of him and so
sure.
on. But he was, he always looked for this deeper reality, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he had this language, I can briefly describe it, between the explicate and the implicate order.
Mm.
The explicate is what shows.
Okay.
It's things like moving around in space and time.
Okay.
And you and I, you're over there, I'm sat here, you're speaking, here's the sound,
sure.
all that stuff, you see. And people say, that's reality. He said, oh, no. This explicate world is really reality enfolded into an implicate world, an implied world, which is not where space and time are just secondary phenomena. There's something deeper. And this is a line in physics that lasted quite 50 years or something, which is emerging. See, that there's this order which what we see in terms of space, time, objects, energies is a kind of charade out the front.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a deeper thing. Mm-hmm. And you have to think beyond all these ordinary categories which we have as people.
And he had glimmers along this line.
He had glimmers, yes. And he was very passionate about this wholeness, you know, as a human being. And that's why he came from a Jewish tradition and so on. He was shattered by the Gulf Wars and all of this happening. And he followed various spiritual paths, as a lot of scientists do, in fact.
Have a kind of I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. I got some friends who are like that, the current people. Because for them, you reach a point when you see it's impossible that you're going to have on the one side science and the other side spirituality, because there's one reality.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Yeah, yep. So you must stack up somewhere along the line.
Sure.
And but it means also you don't distort one to make it fit.
Right.
The other.
Right.
A lot of people do. They distort the spirituality to fit the science, or they distort the science to fit the spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep up the tension. But where they meet, and that was a 40 of my teachers, a man called John Bennett, who had a background in practical science, industrial science and so on, fuel research.
Mm-hmm.
And his great-grandfather was a famous mathematician in England, but he was also devoted to Sufism and the matters of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all those kinds of influences.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to write my own books, it was to do with all around what do I know, but being what I know as a human being, an ordinary human being, and am I just telling old stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And assuming they're true, and I didn't want to simply reject these stories and think I had the better story, but okay, let's explore all the different kinds of stories, and how do we explain things to ourselves and so on. So my example, one of my last books was called, and it's a mouthful, The Gymnasium of Beliefs in Higher Intelligence.
Oh yes, we have that book. Yeah.
Are you better? Otherwise, be quite cross. I don't know if your listeners want to bother me going into this, but the emphasis on gymnasium, which from the Greek is a Greek word, which means where the Greeks actually develop body and mind together, and it means you sweat, you exercise in something, and beliefs. You see, beliefs are just raw material; they're not endpoints. And you can learn through having contrasting beliefs. Like a simple example, some people think that the real intelligence in human life was in the past, and we've gone downhill since then. And like one of in the Amerindian tradition, the ancestors, they are the wise ones, are the ancestors. And the modern world, you get the opposite, the futurism. And even in movies is coming out now. Future mankind is sending messages back to us.
Right, exactly.
You see that? And
sure.
It's absolutely thrilling. But I don't know if it's true.
Well, I'll let you know if I tell myself that from the future.
Yeah. Hello, me.
Yes. I'm listening. I'm open. Talk to me.
Give me a hint.
Yes. Well, and then, so what's emerging in history?
Well, I think it's almost like I could say it's very very obvious, is that so many previous models are falling apart, you know. Mm-hmm. It is,
new discoveries of culture and civilizations and language and math, how far math has actually come. It's been around a lot longer than we thought.
No, and also, as people say, in the last 10 years there have been more mathematics than the previous 10,000.
Wow.
Okay, but you say, well, that's modern maths.
Yeah.
Going back to history, you see, like in a very simple little story, I'm passionate about the history of my own British Isles, which is full of this ancient stuff and the megalithic stuff and Stonehenge.
Sure.
And there's this marvelous place in Scotland called the Orkneys, the Orkney Islands.
Right.
And it's renowned, has these wonderful great stone circles. So you see in this right northern part, these small islands, how do they build these things? Incredible, these great stone circles. And I explored with some people several years ago, and I went, you go from one stone circle and then across to another stone circle. And then a few years later, I was watching television, in the in-between bit, people had dug down and found a whole total new temple complex.
Underneath them?
And between them.
Oh, between them. Wow.
Which nobody had never heard of before.
Sure.
The styles they had never heard of before.
Oh.
And now it's reversing, they're actually thinking all this intense culture, which was agricultural and astronomical, almost might have originated in the Orkneys and come down through England into Stonehenge and so on.
So instead of Stonehenge sending out, was the recipient.
Yes, or a later flowering. Oh,
sure, later, yes.
Flowering, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And, but everywhere it's like this, and sometimes it's always shocking. It's like, say in China, there's still resistance there to the presence of the Caucasians in very early history.
Right.
You know, and now the more and more discovering in the art and the remains of people, there must have been this contact going even far back before the Silk Road even.
Wow.
And I say, wow, don't you say, wow, don't you like
yes,
it?
Yes, I love it, I love it. Yes. I have we both have read 1421, which is a fabulous book. It's by Gavin Menzies, and it's about how China in 1421 sent out a ship of 800 ships to map the world.
Isn't that extraordinary?
And it's just 800 ships, and they deforested China in doing it. And they broke the bank, they were building the Great Wall of China, and they were building the Forbidden City at the same time. And yet they went out and mapped the world accurately, in fact, very accurately. And people thought the maps were wrong, some of them, because, maybe Greenland had land according to these maps, but people thought they were actually islands. Well, now the ice has receded in Greenland and proved the Chinese maps correct. And they charted the Northwest Territory. They went over the Arctic. Yes. And
they reached America, North America, certainly.
And they mapped it. Yeah. So that means that the ice had receded and they're able to go through. And then it, of course, tightened up again. So we have a lot to learn in this beautiful world that we live in.
And yeah, thinking of course the classical story I began about taking mythology seriously. Like the famous story of Troy, there was this archaeologist said, let's take Homer's story literally, let's find Troy.
Right, and he did. Well, thank you, Anthony Blake, for joining me, and we'll see you on a future show.
Great.